Chapter 2, Early Warrior Authority. Minamoto Yoritomo's forces swept from eastern Japan to the west, defeating the Taira armies in 1185. With the help of Kyoto-born nobility and warrior allies, Yoritomo created a warrior regime that lasted until 1333, at which time several prominent warrior clans destroyed the Kamakura regime in the name of the emperor. The shogunate's leading men, first Yoritomo and then a series of regents ruling on behalf of weak titular leaders called shoguns, consolidated their control over Japan at the expense of the nobility. Thus, the typical story about Japan's first warrior regime centers on the institution of the shogunate and how it became the center of a putative warrior order. It focuses on men who managed estates, created a primitive legal court, and interacted with noblemen as either employers, allies, or foes. In popular culture, these men tend to be in armor on a battlefield, constantly engaged in combat. In reality, they spent less time fighting than movies and manga, Japanese graphic novels, would have us believe. The fullness of early warrior history is best captured through its women. All warrior households had military obligations, but those obligations were organized by family units in the broadest sense, large clans comprising women, retainers, and servants who fulfilled menial and complex duties. Military obligation included supplying food, clothing, and labor. It was not simply engaging in combat on the battlefield. Moreover, the survival of any warrior family depended on the efficient management of its wealth, smooth relations among allies, and, especially for elite warrior families, connections with non-warrior aristocrats. Men dominated this process, but could not do so without women. In one sense, women were used as objects, through marriage, to solidify an alliance between elite families. But a woman retained any possessions given to her during her marriage, and she continued to live on her parents' estate or in her own residence, often separately from her husband, making her far more independent than her samurai counterparts during later periods. Warrior wives also wielded tremendous influence on their family's position in society. For example, they acted on behalf of either dead or absent husbands. A widow could carry out her clan's military obligations. Indeed, there might not have been a Kamakura shogunate without women. The Kyoto aristocratic custom of entrusting the future of one's child to female caretakers and their families provided Yoritomo with a stable of warrior and non-warrior connections vital to his success. Since many of Yoritomo's male relatives were killed, he depended on the women who helped raise him as a child. They supplied him with wealth, male allies in his youth, and information from Kyoto. His mother was born into the Fujiwara clan, the most powerful noble family before the 13th century. Her status guaranteed Yoritomo's high position within the Minamoto clan because his father's other consorts were of lower noble blood. And when Kiyomori defeated the Minamoto clan, he spared Yoritomo, it is said, because Kiyomori's stepmother intervened on his behalf. Instead, he exiled Yoritomo to the Izu province in the east, far from Kyoto's center of wealth and power. There, Yoritomo grew up under the watch of Hojo Tokimasa, the 22-year-old head of a minor, obscure family distantly related to the Taira. Like other Kyoto noblemen, Yoritomo was born into a pampered life and must have been shocked by his move to a very rural area as an adolescent. Elite warrior families like the Minamoto followed the courtier model of marriage and child-rearing in which women were at the center. In Kyoto noble culture, nannies and wet nurses came from minor noble families, and the boys placed in their care played and learned alongside these women's own children. Since the boys essentially grew up together, they often became trusted allies as adults, despite differences in social status within the noble hierarchy. The noblewomen, who knew Yoritomo as a child, ensured that he would continue to maintain a decent life in Izu well into adulthood. For example, one of Yoritomo's wet nurses, the nun Hiki, consistently sent him rice, a form of wealth. She controlled her family after her husband's death, and the heir that she adopted, Hiki Yoshikazu, became one of Yoritomo's closest allies and a top advisor in the shogunate after Yoritomo died. Likewise, her son-in-law, Adachi Morinaga, became a trusted advisor to Yoritomo, and his clan provided much-needed economic support to Yoritomo. Hiki's daughter even served as the wet nurse to Yoritomo's son, the second shogun Minamoto Yoriie. A third wet nurse mediated the connection between Yoritomo and her grandson, Miyoshi Yasunobu, who served Yoritomo in a bureaucratic rather than a military function. Indeed, the only older male relative Yoritomo could count on while in Izu was his maternal uncle, the Buddhist monk Yuhan, who sent a servant to Izu once a month to bring Yoritomo news from Kyoto. Yoritomo was not destined for greatness, even though warriors in later centuries would glorify him. He spent most of his adult life in obscurity. It was not until he reached his early 30s, fully middle-aged for the time period, that he attacked the Taira clan and began to create the Kamakura shogunate, an institution left incomplete during his lifetime. His background, supporters, and the political and economic environment for families in the East contributed to his success in elevating warrior authority, a process that continued long after his death. Yoritomo gathered allies around him by taking advantage of their economic anxieties. Warrior families did not own land per se, but could access land and its resources, human and material, through various managerial and policing duties granted to them by absentee landholders. Warriors did not control the appointment or transferring of those duties, nor could a warrior hope to rise into the upper echelons of nobility that would make him a proprietor. Taira Kiyomori, for example, could not be a landowner and merely appointed himself as protector and governor of lands. He had to imitate noble precedent by copying the Fujiwara family's practice of placing a grandson on the imperial throne. Adding to economic insecurity were regional threats from neighboring rivals or family members who might take land or titles by force. It might seem counterintuitive, but the greatest threats came from within one's own clan. With no concept of primogeniture, the oldest son inheriting everything, the death of a clan leader might result in immediate infighting among cousins, uncles, and sons from different women who lived separately from their husbands. For lower-ranking warrior aristocrats or clans not based in and around Kyoto, sons were raised by the mother's family, and the wife's family vied for control over wealth and influence. Thus, when an imperial prince, Mochi Ito, put out the call for people to oust Kiyomori from his position, those who responded took into consideration intra-clan politics, connections to Kyoto nobility, and local rivalries when deciding if and how they would act. Yoritomo spent much of his time fighting relatives and clans traditionally allied to the Minamoto in the early stages of the Genpei War. From the beginning, other Minamoto men such as Yorimasa, who was defeated in 1180, and Yoritomo's cousin, Yoshinaka, also mobilized against Kiyomori, rivaling Yoritomo's efforts. Yoritomo gathered around him warriors whose loyalty he secured by promising them titles, access to land, and a pretext to attack local rivals. He provided an alternative to Kyoto-based authority for people living in the East. In fact, once the Taira troops captured and killed Prince Mochi Ito, the royal court, under Taira influence, declared Yoritomo a rebel. Thus, unlike Kiyomori, whose career was made within the bounds of the imperial government, Yoritomo could confiscate lands from his enemies instead of forfeiting them to the emperor. The Genpei War did not unfold as one might expect. The initial protagonist, Mochi Ito, and antagonist, Kiyomori, died in 1180 and 1181, respectively. Mochi Ito and his Minamoto supporters were cornered and killed, while Kiyomori died of a fever so high, the literary version of the events in the Tale of Heike tells us that it was caused by the guardians and flames of hell coming to claim him. Yoritomo was busy fighting local enemies and rivals, building a headquarters and bureaucracy in Komakura until 1184, when he marched on Kyoto. In 1185, his half-brother Yoshitsune pursued the Taira as they retreated south from Kyoto. Yoshitsune, not Yoritomo, led the more spectacular battles, including the final one along the coast by the Sea of Dan-no-Ura, far southwest from Kyoto and Kamakura. The Minamoto forces destroyed the remnants of the Taira clan, while the Taira noblewomen, one of them still holding on to the child Emperor Antoku, Kiyomori's grandson, dived into the seas of Dan-no-Ura and drowned. So tragic was the defeat of Taira warriors, noblewomen, and servants that local legend claims the spirits of the Taira warriors imprinted themselves onto the carapace of small crabs. The significance of the Genpei War in Japanese warrior history cannot be reduced to a neat list of losers and winners, or of gains and losses. The emperor had no choice but to recognize Yoritomo's emergence as Japan's dominant warrior, making him the constable, shugo, of all of Japan's provinces. He restored Yoritomo's court rank, eliminating his status as a rebel, and recognized his right to assign warriors as managers to estates throughout Japan. But warriors did not control Japan. Even Yoritomo coveted noble court rank and recognition from Kyoto. In his portrait, he is dressed as an aristocrat, not as a warrior in battle dress. The war engendered a sense of unease for all elites, including Kyoto nobles, members of religious institutions, warriors, Yoritomo and his allies, and prominent local families. Rather than simply serving the Kyoto nobility, warriors now encroached on Kyoto's prerogatives of rule, a process that even Yoritomo could not control completely. Yoritomo's Kamakura. Kamakura, a humble village with ancestral connections to the Minamoto, became a site of power during the 1180s. Called simply Okura Palace at the time, it was the location of what is now referred to as the Kamakura Shogunate, Japan's first warrior regime. Across Japan, warriors who wanted to benefit from Yoritomo's success declared that they too were his vassals, called housemen, gokenin, in an attempt to legitimize their local agendas. The shogunate's offices, staffed by minor nobles from Kyoto, monks and warriors, managed applications for houseman status and tried to adjudicate lawsuits against warriors by other warriors and non-warriors. What makes the founding of the shogunate a watershed moment is that it forever changed how one group of warriors related to another. Although this change was limited to those who lived in the city of Kamakura itself, mostly Yoritomo's vassals and those who served the shogunate, it created opportunities for warriors to meet each other on a daily basis. Before the 12th century, most warriors interacted only with family members, servants, and retainers who may have served them. Other than occasional guard duty in Kyoto or military campaigns, warriors of unrelated clans rarely encountered each other. In other words, the shogunate, especially Yoritomo's palace itself, became a place where warriors developed as a social group, an exclusive one. Most of these warriors were directly connected to Yoritomo. The palace functioned as a space for official meetings and social gatherings. It became a place to strengthen ties among warrior families, arrange marriages, and dole out punishment. The day-to-day business of running a government meshed with social events. For example, Yoritomo had one of his vassals murdered during a board game session, Sugoroku. Outside the palace, warriors hunted together and engaged in ceremonies that had both pseudo-religious and martial functions, for example, bouts of sumo wrestling or shooting on horseback. These provided opportunities for warriors to strengthen the bonds to each other and to the shogunate, separate from the non-warrior nobility in Kyoto. Nonetheless, connections to nobility in Kyoto, especially through marriage, remained important to warriors throughout the rest of Japanese history. Not all of Yoritomo's vassals knew each other, and many falsely claimed to serve him. It was not until 1189, when he ordered his housemen to follow him into war against rebels in the northern city of Hiraizumi, that he could finally distinguish between those who were really housemen and those who were not. Housemen who refused his command were stripped of their titles and coveted privileges. For the most part, warriors were concerned about local issues and only secondarily about relations with the shogunate. Loyalty to the shogunate was sometimes loose and did not extend to the many warriors across Japan who were not Yoritomo's vassals. Much like Kiyomori before him, Yoritomo placed nobles favorable to him in important bureaucratic posts in Kyoto while building his own independent headquarters. Yoritomo had no grand blueprint for his rule, and he demanded that warriors follow local practices and precedents established by the nobility. Moreover, Yoritomo's victory did not lead to an era of warrior dominance. He and the shogunate reined in warrior aspirations. They did not take over or destroy the Kyoto government. For the remainder of the 12th century and part of the 13th, Kamakura was a junior ruling partner with Kyoto. Much of what defined Kamakura as a semi-bureaucratic regime developed after 1199, when Yoritomo died in a manner not unheard of among elite warriors, falling from a horse. Hojo's Kamakura. As was the custom for noble and elite warrior families alike, Yoritomo's sons were raised by women and the male relatives connected to their mother, the widowed nun Hojo Masako. She was the closest personal connection between Yoritomo and the shogunate. This put her at the center of a struggle for control over the shogunate that included her brother, Yasutoki, her father, Tokimasa, her son, Yoriie, and his wife's family, the Hiki, and Yoritomo's allies. Though many vassals tried to uphold Yoritomo's legacy through Masako, others challenged that authority. Blind loyalty was not the norm. Nearly a dozen people in the Hiki, Hojo, and Minamoto families died in the succession disputes that followed, and Masako emerged as one of the few sources of continuity in shogunal politics from the late 12th to the early 13th centuries. Masako, far from being a protective mother supporting her son Yoriie, the second shogun, was closer to her birth family, the Hojo. According to the late 13th century historical chronicle Mirror of the East, Yoriie was an ineffectual leader. Not long after his father's death, Yoriie sent a close vassal of Yoritomo on a false errand in the hope of taking the man's lover while he was gone. The vassal returned to Kamakura, having learned about the ruse, and Yoriie planned to preemptively attack the vassal's mansion. Masako occupied the vassal's residence to stop her son's attack, and then berated Yoriie in writing. She also made the vassal promise that he would not retaliate at some later date. Even Minamoto men, such as Yoritomo's half-brother Zenjo, sought Masako's protection. She considered Zenjo a potential threat to her family, however, and rejected him. He was eventually hunted down and killed. Masako's efforts on behalf of her brother, rather than her son Yoriie, pushed Yoriie closer to his in-laws, the Hiki, thus setting the scene for a showdown between the Hiki and Hojo. The Hiki used him to obtain posts in the shogunate and hold sway over his sons who would inherit the shogun title. For example, the Hiki patriarch, Yoshikazu, envisioned his grandson inheriting the shogun title after Yoriie, thus putting the Hiki in a dominant position in the shogunate. But Hojo Tokimasa had the same idea, and under his orders, Yoriie's heir was executed, as were some Hiki family members. In 1203, Masako and her father Tokimasa forced Yoriie to retire after he fell ill. And when Tokimasa heard that Yoriie was planning to have him assassinated, Yoriie too was killed, leaving the Hojo victorious. Naturally, Tokimasa, as the Hojo patriarch, had his own ideas about the shogunate's future. He wanted children from his second wife to control it. But Masako preferred her brother. In 1205, she had her father arrested, and she controlled the shogunate alongside her brother, Yoshitoki. Tension among warrior families was complicated by warrior connections to the Kyoto establishment. Once Yoriie fell ill and died, the last remaining son of Yoritomo was anointed shogun, the 11-year-old Sanetomo. But he was less a warrior than an aristocrat, engaging in activities typically associated with Kyoto nobility. He studied classical poetry assiduously, learning from one of the greatest classical poets, Fujiwara no Teika, and he maintained relatively close ties to Kyoto nobles, including the Emperor Go Toba. Similar to his father, Sanetomo held the title shogun in less esteem than positions awarded to him within the noble hierarchy. He even surpassed Yoritomo in that realm, having received a prestigious administrative title, Minister of the Right, a position, largely ceremonial at this time, that oversaw Kyoto's Council of State. He did not enjoy that title for even a few hours, however. His nephew, Yoriie's son, murdered him during the ceremony, blaming his uncle for his father's death. Thus, Yoritomo's line ended with Sanetomo's murder in 1219. Sanetomo's relationship to the nobility represented a potential high point between the court and the shogunate. Since he did not produce an heir, Masako brokered an agreement with Go Toba in 1218 that would have resulted in an imperial prince becoming the fourth shogun. This would have been an attractive possibility to Go Toba, who could then influence both a new emperor and a new shogun. Instead, Sanetomo's murder became an opportunity for Go Toba to accomplish what Go Shirakawa had tried to do in the aftermath of the Genpei War, bring warriors to heel under Kyoto authority. The Jokyu Order. Go Toba's attack against the shogunate, known as the Jokyu War, 1221, named after the rain year, is hardly worth mentioning as a military event. It pitted Go Toba's hodgepodge of warriors, some Kamakura housemen, and many warriors from the west unaffiliated with the shogunate against the Hojo and their supporters. Each army had about 1,000 soldiers, and the fighting lasted less than a month. But it was significant for its role in shifting power away from the emperor and court in favor of the shogunate. The crown prince, an emperor, and 3 retired emperors were all banished. Here again, Masako seems to have played a decisive role, if the stories of her speech are to be believed, by appealing to the Hojo fighters' sense of loyalty to her late husband. Loyalty might have motivated some warriors on both sides, but others used the war as a pretext to attack rivals. Moreover, a Go Toba victory would probably have curtailed warrior authority throughout Japan, not enhanced it. At any rate, it took the Hojo army only a month to defeat Go Toba's forces. Many of the titles, positions, and bureaucratic structures of the Kamakura shogunate were fully developed during the 13th century under the Hojo after their victory. The Hojo did not conduct themselves with impunity, yet warrior families were eager to maintain stability in the countryside and protect themselves. Even if they did not wholeheartedly support the Hojo, they were at least willing to cooperate with the shogunate for the time being. The shogunate responded to these anxieties by incorporating a broader range of warriors into the shogunate's rule. The Hojo placed more warrior managers, including at least one woman, on estates throughout Japan, particularly among those of Go Toba's defeated supporters and in regions where there had been none before the shogunate was established. Rather than follow the myriad pre-Jokyu customs for tax collection, The shogunate attempted to standardize collection across all estates. These expansive policies could not have worked under the early shogunate, when Yoritomo and his immediate successors had neither the manpower nor the know-how to challenge Kyoto precedent. In those days, the shogunate followed Kyoto's lead, ruling with Kyoto rather than against it. After the Jokyu War, however, the shogunate expanded warrior authority and intensified its penetration throughout Japan. The Hojo empowered military governors to stop rebellions, to hunt down criminals, to defend the coasts against pirates, and, in distant southern Japan, to try and judge criminals. These military governors could move across estate borders and public land, which local warriors could not do. Nonetheless, appointments to the military governor position were not permanent. Governors did not have the power to tax and could not act independently of the shogunate or infringe upon non-warrior lands. For example, the Kamakura shogunate's first legal code, the Laws and Regulations for Judgment, Gosebai Shikimoku, was not enacted until 1232 as a response to the Jokyu War. Although it is typically described as a set of military laws, it reflects many issues that had been common in the Kyoto bureaucracy. Calling it a law overestimates the extent of its impact over the diverse groups of people called warriors. The term law did not carry with it the meanings it does in the modern world. For example, there were few mechanisms for enforcing rules in the pre-modern world, nor was there a legal culture saturating daily life as there is today. No pre-modern government could enforce, or even conceive of, the monitoring and categorization of human life and property from birth to death as a modern government does. Mostly, the laws and regulations for judgment established expectations and consequences laid out for military governors and land stewards, upper and middle management. Many warriors in places far from Kamakura simply ignored the code. Nonetheless, the laws and regulations marked the first time that a warrior regime in Japan created a model for behavior applicable to warriors across space and time. Warrior leaders and intellectuals studied it up to the 19th century, long after the Kamakura shogunate had collapsed. As a legal document, in keeping with the practice by the shogunate since its beginning, it emphasized following precedent. Governors of provinces and estate, non-warrior proprietors, may exercise their normal jurisdiction without referring to the shogunate authorities. In fact, such proprietors were told that the shogunate would not even entertain requests from temples or shrines that wanted guidance from the shogunate. The code attempted to restrain newly empowered housemen and administrators after the Jokyu War. Stewards found skimming tax collections or collecting more tax than was required shall be deprived of their posts. Even if their deputies committed crimes or otherwise contravened the laws and precedents, the steward would be held responsible if he knew about it and tried to shield the deputy. Military governors who confiscated property for some offense without making a proper report would be dealt with criminally. In the mid-14th century, a trial handbook titled A Book for Those Unskilled in Legal Matters, Sata Mirensho, was created that defined simple terms like plaintiff and more complicated concepts such as miscellaneous civil cases and criminal cases. Among the civil cases were money or grain loans with interest, sale of paddy fields, slaves or semi-free workers, and abduction of servants. The criminal cases included rebellion, night attacks, robbery with violence, secret theft, brigandry, piracy, murder, arson, battery, wounding with a sharp weapon, arson, seizing and raping women, creating a panic and stealing people's valuables as they flee, or harvesting another's paddy or dry field. And what was life like for warriors across Japan? It depended on whom you worked for and your position within that local hierarchy. The shogunate expected its housemen to spend several months during the year performing guard duty in Kyoto, providing service to a provincial governor, or perhaps working on an estate in some bureaucratic and police function. Men might be rotated through different positions in order to learn the full range of duties required of shogunal vassals. Warriors who were not directly connected to the shogunate worked in similar capacities locally, serving various functions for a noble family, a Buddhist temple complex, or powerful clans in the countryside with loose or non-existent ties to Kyoto nobility or the Kamakura shogunate. Some warriors worked directly for the emperor. Since Japan was not in a constant state of war, however, duties tended to be mundane or physical. Many warriors worked in agriculture alongside commoners. Most warriors struggled economically. Estate stewards were typically paid from the taxes they collected, and they often abused their tax-collecting power. Economically, clans that had access to land suffered after several generations as the custom of equal inheritance among sons and daughters had whittled away the family estate. Building projects, patronizing Buddhist temples, buying artwork from China, participating in courtly rituals, these were just some of the drains on elite warrior wealth that forced them to borrow money from local merchants, an indebtedness that was never resolved. Nor could their traditional sources of income, namely produce from land, maintain pace with a growing commercial economy. These problems did not occur suddenly, but they were exacerbated by the Mongol invasions. The Mongol Incursion. In 1215, Kublai Khan, the grandson of Chinggis Khan and leader of the Mongols, achieved what his grandfather could not: the conquest of China. From Beijing, Kublai embarked on several decades of invasions with mixed success. He subjugated Korea, for example, but despite repeated attempts, failed to conquer Java, the Vietnamese kingdoms of Dai Viet and Champa, and Japan. Warrior history was never completely separate from events elsewhere in Asia, and although the Mongols never made gains in Japan, their invasions exposed weaknesses in the warrior order. In the standard account of the invasions, the Mongol-led forces, which included many Chinese and Koreans, attacked the southern island of Kyushu twice. In 1274 and again in 1281, the Japanese warriors met a vastly superior force in terms of troop size, organization, and technology, including the use of explosives. Military historians blamed the so-called traditional form of Japanese combat, announcing one's lineage and engaging in one-on-one combat, for the Japanese losses. The first invasion lasted only a day before a great storm blew the Mongols back into the sea. The Japanese prepared defenses along Hakata Bay, including a wall, and held the Mongols off for several months before another storm came along to save the day. The storms became known as the Divine Wind, kamikaze, a term that became popular only in the wartime propaganda of the 1930s and 1940s. During the end of World War II, the Japanese military hoped that a divine wind of suicide pilots would prevent a new invasion of another superior foreign horde, the Americans. Recent scholarship suggests that the storms might have been a myth. Instead, religious institutions had pushed the divine intervention story in order to accrue rewards for doing their part to defeat the Mongols. Some historians claim that the storms alone could not have defeated the Mongols. So why did the Mongols retreat? Perhaps the Japanese were not outmatched and defeated the Mongols through combative effectiveness. Or the Mongols did indeed overwhelm the Japanese and only wanted to test Japanese military strength, not commit to a full-scale invasion. Kublai was still fighting the Chinese throughout the 1270s and had embarked on invasions elsewhere during the 1280s. He had neither the means nor the inclination to fully invade Japan. Defending Kyushu and preparing for a third invasion that never came enhanced Hojo presence in southern and central Japan. The number of military governors in those areas increased, and they were often members of the Hojo family or its branches. The shogunate recruited men from estates that had been free from any shogunate intervention before the Mongol invasions. Once the shogunate reached into estates not owned by its own vassals, they never again left them alone. Hojo jurisdiction over major temples and shrines, previously limited to eastern Japan, now extended to those in western Japan as well. The Mongol invasions did not create new problems for warrior rule. Rather, they exacerbated old ones. Many warriors who mobilized their men to defend Kyushu hoped to receive rewards for their efforts. With no national tax or much economic support from the shogunate itself, the burden fell upon those warriors to collect more tax from the lands around them. The Hojo themselves had few newly acquired lands to hand out, and those who received some rewards were typically warriors in Kyushu. The Hojo ordered Kyushu families to limit inheritance to male offspring, taking economic prerogatives away from daughters, a practice that, over time, extended to warriors throughout Japan. Gradually, inheritance fell to the oldest son, subordinating even the other male offspring. The Hojo also issued a series of prohibitions against warriors selling their land or giving it to non-relatives. These culminated in a virtuous edict that forced anyone who had received land from a warrior family, either as collateral on debts or as commodities sold under the guise of gift-giving, to return it to the original warrior families. These debt cancellations were virtuous because land was not a commodity to be bought and sold, but an inherent part of a warrior clan's heritage. As with other pre-modern edicts, these were often unclear. Many times, even the beneficiaries' claims were unenforceable, and some shrine priests believed the edict applied to them too. Execution and enforcement of the prohibitions were frequently impossible. Kamakura in decline. Rank-and-file Kamakura vassals and the shogunate suffered from internal disputes during the latter half of the 13th century. Two of the Hojo family's most powerful vassals, Taira Yoritsuna and Adachi Yasumori, began fighting each other after the death of the powerful shogunal regent, Hojo Tokimune, 1284. In 1285, Yoritsuna tried to hunt down Yasumori, which led to a series of murders, purges, and suicides among their supporters and underlings, until Yoritsuna himself was killed in 1293. Such violent political intrigues rippled throughout Kyoto, where nobles split into groups of those who resented Hojo involvement in court politics and those who supported the shogunate. Warrior branch families began breaking off from the main clan by answering the call to defend Kyushu on their own and not simply under the orders of the clan leader. Gradually, warrior clans allied less with their geographically distant kin and more with neighboring warriors. Adding to the tensions at the top of society, at the bottom, there were growing numbers of bandits, pirates, mercenaries, and marauders simply referred to as evil bands, Akuto. Neither the Kamakura shogunate and its vassals nor the court in Kyoto maintained a monopoly over violence in Japan. In the latter half of the 13th century, these bands of men grew from perhaps a few dozen at most to several hundred. Their numbers peaked during the early 14th century, as did their complexity. Some even built forts, joined forces with local warriors, or worked for local temples. Many diverse groups of people armed themselves in order to attack the ever-monetizing, commercializing economy of the 13th century and to defend themselves against threats from the top of society as well as the bottom. The legacy of the first warrior regime. Toward the end of the samurai era, in the mid-19th century, warrior pundits linked their existence to Yoritomo's legacy. For them, Yoritomo was a founding father of warrior rule. In general, however, such lavish praise for Yoritomo occurred only late in pre-modern warrior history. During his lifetime, Yoritomo was not universally well-regarded. Yoritomo killed his cousin, Yoshinaka, and his half-brother, Yoshitsune, when Yoritomo wanted to meet the Chinese monk Chinnaku, who rebuilt the Todaiji Temple in Kamakura after it burned down in 1180, the monk, repulsed by Yoritomo's violent ways, rebuffed him. When Yoritomo sent him gifts, Chinna refused to receive them except for a horse saddle and a suit of armor. He donated the saddle to the temple and had the armor melted down and refashioned into nails. Political machinations within the shogunal leadership throughout the late 12th and 13th centuries were violent. Kinsmen remained murder targets. None of Yoritomo's direct descendants died peaceful deaths, and his line did not endure. The story of Japan's first warrior regime was one of gradual change. Its existence began with the events in Kyoto among the nobility and the emperors. Bureaucratic models, and often the bureaucrats themselves, measures of wealth, patronage of religious institutions, literary conventions, and even marriage politics originated in Kyoto. Whether claiming to be a Minamoto man, invading noble or temple lands, or using their Kamakura-appointed position to rob locals, warriors had to contend with institutions and customs not of their own creation. On the other hand, the Kyoto elite could never contain warrior authority. The emperor bestowed the title of shogun, but that never implied control. Neither Yoritomo nor the Hojo had to ask to be shogun. They demanded it. At least several Kyoto sovereigns tried to take back warrior power, first with Go Shirakawa, who played Yoritomo against his half-brother Yoshitsune, and again with Go Toba, whose fight against the Hojo was short-lived. A third emperor, Go Daigo, succeeded in challenging the shogunate in 1333, but even then the court was unable to check warrior aspirations. Nobles in Kyoto and prominent warriors in Kamakura never completely split into separate realms. After Sanetomo's death in 1219, shoguns came from the Kyoto nobility, not from warrior families. Legal documents from the Kamakura shogunate speak to the importance of family, broadly defined, which included not only blood relatives, but also warrior retainers, non-warrior servants, nannies and wet nurses, and branch lines distant both geographically and temporally, all of whom could be one's greatest allies or most dangerous enemies. This is true not only of those at the top of warrior society, but also among marginal clans, whose desire to persevere and expand could either be threatened or strengthened through military, religious, and noble networks around Japan. Weak though it might have been, the Kamakura shogunate established a model for subsequent warrior regimes. In 1862, a warrior bureaucrat, complaining about meddling by the Kyoto nobility and their supporters, noted that warriors had been in charge of Japan's politics since the Kamakura shogunate. His boss, Japan's last shogun, eventually surrendered to the emperor in 1868, and a year later, a newly formed modern government announced, "Now the evil of misrule by the warriors since the Kamakura period has been overcome, and imperial government has been restored."